The following is a Sunday Feast lecture given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Dasat Hikari, recorded on January 28, 2007, in Austin, Texas, USA.
So, we encourage everyone to try to understand what is your actual identity. You're one with God because you're His energy. And therefore, because you have that connection with Him, that eternal connection with Him is His energy, you're meant to serve Him. That's why you exist. Now, some philosophers say that at the time of death, everything is finished. You merge into God, or you merge into nothingness, or you merge back into the material elements. There's different schools of thought. The Buddhists, the Mayavadis, and the scientists all have a similar view, that you simply merge back into something, and you cease to exist. One gentleman named Randy, he just wrote me an email, and he asked me, well, what? He doesn't really believe that death, everything is finished. But he was wondering, well, how do we defeat that conception philosophically? How do we defeat that? And I gave him a number of arguments, one of them being the supreme authority himself, Lord Sri Krishna, states in the Bhagavad Gita, na tvevaham jatu nasam na tvang neme janadipa, never was there a time when I did not exist, nor you, nor all these kings, nor in the future shall any of us cease to be. So all the great acharyas of India have accepted Krishna as the supreme authority. Even Shankaracharya, who's founded the Mayavadi path, he also himself accepts Krishna as the supreme authority, and taught Mayavadiism as a ploy to drive Buddhism out of India, actually, temporarily. As a temporary emergency measure, he introduced Mayavadi philosophy to drive Buddhism out of India, because Buddhism had completely squashed the Vedic culture. Because that's another story. But Buddha did that also. He was Krishna himself doing that for a certain purpose, to stop the cow killing, which is going on in the name, the distorted mis-explanation of the Vedas. So he stopped that by denying the Vedas altogether. And then Shankaracharya came and re-established Vedic culture in a way that was similar to the Buddhist conception, that everything merges into oneness. And then Krishna sent a whole series of Vaishnava acharyas who established the proper conclusion of simultaneous oneness and difference with the Supreme. So, this gentleman was wondering, you know, how to defeat this notion that the Buddhists have, the Mayavadis, and the scientists. The Buddhists say it merges into nothingness. The Shankarites, the Mayavadis, say it merges into oneness. And the scientists say it merges back into the material energy. They all say that the individual ceases to exist at death. They all take that same notion. Or upon liberation. Actually, the Buddhists and the Mayavadis say you stay in the cycle until you get liberated, moksha, or nirvana. And then you finally give up your individual existence. But all three, the Buddhists, the Mayavadis, and the scientists, they all want to annihilate the individual existence. But here's the question that I raise that every intelligent person should consider. Why, if God's ultimate desire was that you merge and you cease to exist, then why would you exist to begin with? If perfection is non-existence, then what would explain existence as we are in the state we're in now? Why would we exist to begin with if non-existence was the goal? Does it make sense? If non-existence was the perfection, then why would we exist at all? Why would God, if our existence is a disease state, then why would we exist at all? It doesn't make sense, you see. So the individual existence of a living being is far more logical. And we actually understand from the great Vaishnava Acharyas that the reason for our existence is the Lord emanates us from Himself for, just like many of you parents have kids, like these kids back here. Why do you have children? Because you want to expand the loving relationships in the family, isn't it? Husband and wife, they have a nice loving, but they think, let's have more loving relationships. So we'll have some kids, so we can have more loving relationships. So, that we can understand, just like a grain of rice can tell what is the condition of the entire pot. If we study our own nature, we can understand something of the nature of God, since we are part of God, we are His energy. So that tendency to want to enjoy loving relationship is actually there in God Himself. Nature is there. So that's why we exist. God emanates us from Himself for the purpose of having a loving relationship. So do you think He want to annihilate us after emanating us out of Himself to enjoy a loving relationship? I mean, what parents here would want to kill their children? Only a demoniac parent. Any parent with even the slight degree of piety would never dream of killing their children. Now, some parents do who are uncontrolled, who have anger problems, you know, greed problems. You know, they do. There are parents who do murder their children. But any parent with even the slightest tinge of decency would never even dream of such a thing or even speak of such a thing. I mean, even to say this in this assembly is, you know, it's the thought is just horrible. You see. Of course, it happens. It's in the news all the time. You know, but some lady in Houston, there's a big trial last year about it. I don't even want to say it. It's so horrible what she did to her children. But God would never. Why would then? On the same token, you think God is some cruel, anger-ridden, greedy person? Did He want to annihilate His own children? Of course not. Just like we as parents are. And of course, I'm not a parent in that sense, but I have many disciples all over the world who I love very, very dearly, you see. We parents and gurus, we would never want to annihilate our children or our disciples. They're our dearmost possession, you can say. They're very dear to us. So that tendency is there in God. He would never want to annihilate His beloved parts and parcels by having them merge into oneness, into nothingness, or into the material nature. So, in this way, I explained to Randy that this idea of, you know, the self merging into nothingness just doesn't make sense. I mean, God wouldn't want that. It's obvious that such a conception doesn't. It's a ludicrous conception. It doesn't make sense. Yet they want us to believe that the ultimate perfection is to merge into the oneness and cease to exist as an individual. There's an old song, "I don't want to live in a world without love." So if everything merges into oneness, then where's the love? You see, love means two, Krishna and you. How there can be love if you and Krishna merge into Brahman, and all there is Brahman. And another fallacy of this all is one philosophy is they distinguish between Maya and Brahman. How can there be a distinction, a two-ness of Maya on the one hand and Brahman, the spiritual oneness, on the other hand? There couldn't be any Maya. If everything was one, then Maya could, or the sense, the artificial sense of duality could not exist. They say that actually right now there's an artificial sense of duality that we have. It's artificial, it's not real. It's an illusion of duality that we're experiencing right now. But how there could be, how illusion could exist if everything was absolutely one? Illusion could not exist if everything was one. So in this way I explained to Randy. Actually, he didn't need to be convinced, but people were approaching him with these arguments and he didn't know how to defeat them. He knew that Krishna is there eternally and I'm there eternally as His servant. I just had to perfect my relationship with Him. But he didn't know what to say when they brought all these arguments forward. Actually, we have unlimited arguments to defeat all of these attacks against the teachings of the Bhagavad Gita. As one advances in Krishna consciousness, one becomes connected directly with the super soul within the heart, and the super soul gives all answers to all of these challenges. We saw this in our spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, that he could defeat anyone. He could talk to a biologist, a chemist, a physicist, you know, a Sanskritist, a businessman, it didn't matter who, a politician, anyone could come and make arguments against Krishna consciousness. And Prabhupada could defeat all the arguments you know, an LSD hippie who thought he was God, you know. Prabhupada could defeat everyone. Because he was not doing it out of any egotism. He was simply in a mood of love, wanting to help people to become happy. That's all. Because of that pure desire that he had simply to help the people become happy, Krishna within the heart supplied him with unlimited arguments to defeat all the materialistic challenges people made against the teachings of the Bhagavad Gita. The Bhagavad Gita is perfect. It's absolutely perfect knowledge coming directly from God. So if we will study this Bhagavad Gita very carefully, if we will mold our lives according to its teachings, then we will be very happy, successful, peaceful people in this world. And at the end, we will go back to home, back to Godhead, never to take birth here, take birth again here in this world where there's terrorism going on, there's crime, there's disease, pestilence, natural disasters going on, and it's getting worse and worse in the Kali Yuga. I grew up here back in the 50s in this country. I was part of the, what they called the baby boom, post-World War II baby boom. And I've seen since the 50s, it's actually shocking to see how this country is going down and down and down and down, becoming more and more a chaotic place. And in India, it's even shocking to me more. I've been going to India since 1980. And what I've seen in India in the last, 27 years, that's even more shocking to me. How Kali Yuga has infiltrated India. It's painful. I'll tell you honestly, it pains me very much. It disturbs me like anything when I go to India. And I see how much the culture is coming down there. This is all the influence of the Kali Yuga. So what can we do about it? There's a lot we can do about it. That's the good news. The process of Krishna consciousness not only purifies your own heart, but it has a purifying impact on the entire world society to the extent that you purify your own consciousness by chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, and engaging in coming for the Sangha with the devotees and the Kirtan, the Prasad, the Pravachan. The more we purify our hearts by coming together in this Vaishnava Sangha, that has a purifying impact on each one of us individually. And of course it's good for your kids as well in terms of their future piety and growing up in an impious culture. It's necessary. These kids have to come and have this taste. They have to learn how to sit and hear and be a part of it, not think, how can I play out in the yard? I mean, you know, that's all right in the beginning, but they have to learn how to tune in and hear and learn and discover the wonderful identity they actually have beyond their body. These things are exciting for someone of any age. Bhakta Prahlad was only 5 years old, and he was telling his classmates about this philosophy. And they said, "Oh, Prahlad, we just want to play. We don't want to hear this." Prahlad said, "No, you hear this. You must hear this. You must begin now the process of self-realization. There's no such thing as being too young for self-realization, Kirtan." He said, "That's why I want you to take it very seriously." You see? So, this process of Krishna consciousness will, the more we get into it by hearing, chanting, remembering Lord Krishna, the more we will become purified, and the more we are purified, then our mere existence on this planet will have an uplifting, purifying effect on the whole society. So, the more we advance in Krishna consciousness, we're doing something tangibly to change the world situation and bring back piety to this planet, to bring back God consciousness to this planet. So we're asking you, for your own sake, for the sake of your kids, for the sake of the world society, please, please, please become serious about Krishna consciousness. We have these programs every week here. Either when I'm not here, Abhicharan, my disciple, he takes care to see the programs are going on. We have so many books we encourage you to purchase, especially Bhagavad Gita as it is there. You can leave a donation in the basket, like $10, if you don't have it already. We have Japamala. You can purify your consciousness by chanting every day the names of God. Please, please, please take up this pathway. Purify your existence. Do the greatest good for yourself, for your wife, your kids, your family members, your friends, and the whole human society. So I thank you very much for your kind attention, and now I can ask if there's any questions. Yes?
Even though you mentioned about the non-dualistic philosophy, I'm also a bit concerned about the consistency even within our own philosophy. For example, here, today you were in the purport, it's mentioned about that you also mentioned about the energetic Krishna and the energy Krishna. And I cannot understand how the energy can be one with the energetic at all.
Oh, okay.
Because
Prabhupada, again and again, has given a very nice example in this connection to help understand. There's the sun and the sunshine. It's a common thing to say, oh, here the sun has come. Even the Beatles had a song called Here Comes the Sun. You're in your room and you go, oh, the sun has come. The sun has risen. You see? The sun is here. We sometimes say like that, oh, now the sun is here. Here comes the sun. But that's not the, even though it's the sun, it's actually not the sun. It's the sunshine. If the sun itself had come, you'd be burned to a crisp. So just as we sometimes refer to the sunshine as being the sun, she read it on an RKJ, in the same sense, we sometimes refer to the energy of Krishna as being Krishna. Or the other example that I gave is the ocean water. I can say, this is Atlantic Ocean. Because it's a drop of Atlantic Ocean water, but it's not the entire, you see, in that sense.
This analogy of ocean, a drop of ocean, since instead if you just continue the fire analogy, like fire and the light, because in the case of ocean, in that analogy, it just becomes like, even in quality, it's actually the same. However, I'm just thinking here, but the fire and the light, in quality, they are not the same too. I mean, there is a qualitative as well as a quantitative difference.
Fire has light, and fire, the rays of the fire also have, they illuminate and they warm up. Okay. Just like if you put your hand directly in the fire, you get hot. And also if you're at a distance from the fire, you also get hot. The quality of heat is there in the fire and in the rays of the fire. There is oneness. The qualities of heat and light exist both in the fire and in the rays of the fire. Whether you're in the fire or you're within a certain range of the fire, you're still going to get heat and light. So there is oneness. Questions more? You must continue inquiring until you're satisfied.
For example, I was reading in similar lines, I was reading the purports of Srimad Bhagavatam 1.5.33, I think.
Mm-hmm.
There is a
Narada Muni speaking. Narada. Yes, that's right.
There is a, in the purport, it's about prasadam and how prasadam is spiritual. And there the purport talks about when at one stage how everything is one. There is something like that is mentioned. The first question I have is, since before offering, since the food itself forms only a part of the external energy of the Lord, since and then how does it get, even if it is said that it is converted spiritual, which potency, whether it is part of the internal potency or still is it external potency?
No. When the prasadam, when the foodstuff, before the foodstuff is offered to Krishna, it is Krishna's external energy. Mm-hmm. And after it is offered to Krishna and accepted by him, it becomes transformed into internal energy by the Lord's potency. That's the difference. When you eat, if you eat unoffered food, you remain in karma chakra. By eating offered food, you get liberated from karma chakra. There's a big difference. It's because it's been transformed from matter into spirit by the potency of the Lord.
Even regarding the qualitative difference here, even like how it's mentioned in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu that Krishna alone possesses 64 qualities, and even if the form of Narayana himself possesses only 60 of those 64, then there is a clear qualitative difference also, isn't it? I mean,
there is, even though Narayana and Krishna are one and the same, there are some slight differences there. Yeah.
So
Narayana is 96% Krishna, and Krishna is 100% Krishna.
So I was just saying about this analogy of a drop from an ocean, whether it really applies to us, or because a drop of ocean is qualitatively 100% same as that of the ocean itself, but here it's...
Yeah, it's a rough analogy. In the perfected state, the living entity is almost qualitatively the same as the Lord, 78%. Qualitatively one with the Lord, not 100%. So, yes, there are some even qualitative differences. We possess up to 78% of the qualities of God we possess as jivas. When we're fully liberated, they'll be fully manifest.
And even among individual souls, there are differences.
Between
one jiva.
Every jiva is unique. We have seen the snowflakes. If you look at photographs under microscopes of the beautiful, actually snowflakes are beautiful. You look at a snowflake under a microscope. Every snowflake has a unique pattern. There's no two snowflakes in the entire existence that have the same pattern. Do you know that? So in the same sense, every single jiva has unique qualities and characteristics which are possessed only by him. And therefore, Krishna wants to enjoy a loving relationship from that particular jiva, that he cannot have that exact same relationship with any other jiva except for that jiva.
Well, in that sense, the term Brahma Bhuta Prasannatma. So how will it really apply when all the individual soul itself is different?
To see all living entities equally, Brahma Bhuta Prasannatma Nasochati Nakamshati. To see them equally is to see that they are all pure. They're all pure spirit. There are common things. To see all living entities equally. Samak sarveshu bhuteshu, to see all living entities equally, means to see they're all part and parcel of Krishna, they're all ultimately servants of Krishna. To see them equally doesn't mean that you don't see the difference also. Just like I see you're all nice people here, you've come to the program, you're all one in that sense. But I see you're each one individual also. You have different personalities, just like Deepak Gandhi has a certain personality, and Hari Singh has a personality, and Harendra Jagtiani has a certain personality, and Vitalbhai Mistry has a certain personality. So even though you're all one, you all have some attraction to Krishna, so you've come to hear his glories and chant his names and take his prasadam, still, within that oneness, there are also so many distinctions. Different qualities, different characteristics, different types of personalities. So I see all of you equally, but at the same time I see your differences. How are you saying?
I recently read a report on the computer that the communist Chinese government considered a lot of requests from human rights organizations around the world to stop enforcing their one-child policy. And communist Chinese said, no, we will continue to do our one-child policy, and I'm sorry, we're just going to keep doing it, against the requests of a lot of human rights violations.
Uh-huh.
Is there a way for the human beings around the world to pray for the communist Chinese government to stop this one-child policy?
The best thing to do to stop all of these demoniac things that are happening on this planet is to just become a pure devotee of Krishna. That is the most powerful, the thing is, if you want to address each particular issue, and there's actually thousands and millions of demoniac things happening. I mean, it would be staggering if you just made a list of all the things that are going wrong on this planet. You could spend your whole life assembling the list and still not come to the end of it. So to try to do it in a piecemeal fashion will be staggering, to say the least. That's one of millions of demoniac things that are happening right now on the planet. So the easiest way is to address the whole disrupted social order at the root, the root cause, instead of the symptomatic level. The best thing is to go in at the root cause is that people are not in harmony with God. That's the ultimate. I am out of harmony with God. Everyone's out of harmony with God. So the best thing is you harmonize you become in complete harmony with Krishna. Take what he's saying here in the Bhagavad Gita and make it your life. Become a living embodiment of the teachings of the Bhagavad Gita, you see. And by doing that, as Krishna confirms in chapter 3, text number 21, you can go home and look it up in your Bhagavad Gita. Yad yad acharati shreshtas tat tadeve tarojana sayat pramanam kurute lokas tadanuvartate. Whatever example a great man sets, all the world pursues. Whatever standard he sets by exemplary acts become followed by everyone. So if you yourself become an acharya, an ideal embodiment of the teachings given by Krishna in the Gita, then there's going to be a ripple effect coming out from your activities and your thoughts also and your words. Just like a drop of water a rock thrown into the pond creates a ripple effect. It goes out through the pond. If you become potent in Krishna consciousness, your thoughts, your words, and your deeds will have a ripple effect on the entire universe, not only this planet, but even other planets. So that's what you have to do, become a pure devotee. Chant the Hare Krishna mantra at least 16 times a day on japa beads.
Huh? Then everything else will follow.
That's right. It will have a revolutionary impact on the all the demoniac things that are happening. They will gradually be worn down and purified by the spreading of Krishna consciousness. That's right. So if you want to do something to make a spiritual revolution, to put a stop to all this crud that's coming down the tubes and every corner of the planet right now, become a pure devotee. And then automatically, and then at the same time, you know, just like I'm traveling all over the world to spread this science because we see the dire need for it. Practically constantly, this has just become a little stopping point for me now here in Austin.
Do you go to communist China too?
Huh?
Do you go to communist China?
I've been invited there. I have a student there, Mr. Zhang. Actually, he's a young boy living with his parents, and he wants to be a devotee, but he's undercover right now. There are ways to get in. Zhang Li, Zhangli, Zhang Li is one of my dedicated students in communist China right now. He's just waiting for me to come. He wants to meet me.
The reason why I bring up China is because China is getting strong militarily, and a lot of folks I've been hearing thinking that China might attack the United States one day.
Well, yeah, they develop a technology to shoot down satellites now.
Yeah, and they might bring all their force to, you know.
And if the Chinese don't come, the Al Qaeda may come also. They're itching to take over the U.S. Al Qaeda would love to take over the U.S. and make us all bow down to Allah or have our brains blown out by their machine guns. They would love to do that. Al-Qaeda would love to take over. That Osama bin Laden would love to take over, move into the White House and take over here. No doubt. So we have a lot of threats right now to the current world order. And all of this stuff is coming because of the fact that we're not really connected with God. And all these threats are a manifestation of demoniac consciousness on this planet. So what we really have to do is purify our own consciousness. And then spread that purity to our friends, our family members, and everybody we can impact wherever we go. That's when I travel. I don't go in pants and shirt and a hat. I show my full identity as a devotee. Even when I went to the Muslim countries, I go in Turkey anyway, I went like that, completely as a devotee. In one country, though, they said to cross the border, I had to put a hat on and grow my hair out. So I did that. The devotees told me I had to do that. So I did. We had to be practical sometimes as well. But as a general rule, everywhere I go, I just go as a devotee and spread this Krishna consciousness movement with great enthusiasm, determination, and patience. Next question. Yes.
It is said that whatever we do, or say whatever is going to happen, it is inevitable. Say, birth,
yes.
Death,
yes. It's karma, yes.
Under God's hand. It's under God's control.
Yes, yes.
So if it is going to happen, inevitable, everything is going to happen.
Yes, yes.
Then we can't make any change.
Yes, why? Yes, yes. Okay. What you're saying is a true principle within the karmic laws. That's a fact. Everything is going on predestined by the laws of karma. However, that philosophy does not take into account the fact that anybody who wants to jump out of karma chakra can do so. The fact is we are being carried along. It's like being on a conveyor belt, just being, you know, there you go. You're in the fact, you know, the manufactured item just is on the belt, and it's, you know, comes here, dip, dip, it goes there, dip, dip, another thing, and just going down the conveyor belt. Just, you know, a victim of the conveyor belt. Whatever that happens to him in the next step, he just has to take it. He has no choice. That's a fact as long as we're under the influence of the material nature. The material nature is like exactly what you described. That is the material nature. But what that does not take into account is this. What that does not take into account is that you are a jiva. You're actually spiritual in nature. You have given up your freedom of spirit to become a slave of karma chakra. Because you wanted to try to enjoy independently from the Lord. He said, okay, give it a shot. You can go down to karma chakra and see how you like being independent from me. And when you're tired of it, whenever you get tired of it, you have the power to jump out of karma chakra. You have that power buried deep within you. And when you come in contact with a bona fide spiritual master who's been empowered by the Lord to reactivate your spiritual nature, you can do so if you take advantage of the mercy of the spiritual master. By his mercy, you can actually reactivate your spiritual nature and jump out of karma chakra. So that what you're saying is a principle. It's called karma. It's a fact. But there's another principle, and that's called akarma. But of course, we rarely see that. But those are called liberated personalities. And anybody who wants to become liberated can actually become liberated. The Lord within your heart has been waiting for the countless eons of lifetimes that you've been circling in the cycle here. He's been waiting. The fact is, if you don't make an effort to get out, you'll remain eternally under karma chakra. You'll never get out. Nitya Badha. You'll be an eternally conditioned soul, just being tossed this way and that by the waves of the material nature, with no control really over what's going to happen to you. Sometimes you'll be a demigod, sometimes you'll be a Brahma, sometimes an Indra, sometimes an Indragopa, which is a germ. Sometimes you'll be in America having a good income, sometimes you'll be in Ethiopia starving to death. You see? You have no control over it. You'll be going up and down and around in karma chakra. So that is not a very nice position to be in. But you, as an eternal part and parcel of the Lord, have the power, if you want to get out, to pray to the Lord to release you from this karma chakra. And when you pray sincerely to do that, the Lord will bring you into contact with a bona fide spiritual master, who will then give you the keys to liberate yourself from this prison of material existence. So, in that sense, the world situation can be transformed if people, the fate can be altered. It's also stated that man is the architect of his own destiny. So that only applies if one takes to the spiritual platform. On the material platform, it's a fact we're just under the stringent rules of karma. But on the spiritual platform, there's full freedom. There's full freedom. This Krishna consciousness movement is coming in as an alternative to karma chakra. If you're not happy with the way karma chakra is, what karma chakra is dishing out for the human society right now, the Krishna consciousness movement is offering you an option. If you'd like to help people actually get out of their suffering condition in karma chakra, here's a way to do it. You see? Okay.
There's nothing greater than Brahman, then at least for us, Brahman is only the effulgence surrounding the personality of the Lord. Then if it is completely defined according to the dualistic philosophy, then since for them Brahman is the personality of Lord himself, I can understand how it clearly fits the description that Brahman is supreme and there is nothing greater than Brahman. And for us, since it's only the effulgence surrounding the personality of the Lord, how can Brahman be...
Well, there's three aspects of Brahman. There is Brahman, there is the perfect Brahman, and there is the more perfect Brahman, and there is the most perfect Brahman. So what do you want? Do you want perfect, more perfect, or most perfect Brahman? You see, you have your choice. Do you want perfect Brahman, more perfect Brahman, or most perfect Brahman? The impersonal Brahman effulgence, that is called perfect Brahman. The more perfect Brahman is Paramatma, the Lord within the heart and all-pervading. And the most perfect Brahman is Lord Sri Krishna in the spiritual world, from whom unlimited Paramatmas are manifesting throughout the totality of existence, and whose effulgence is actually the ground of all existence. So what do you want? Perfect Brahman, more perfect Brahman, or most perfect Brahman? You have your choice. Question? Yeah.
Yes. Since we're all being emanated by Krishna.
Yes.
So is Dharma the intrinsic nature? Is that not being emanated?
Everything's emanating. Everything is emanating.
Isn't it natural then for everyone to want to be?
Everyone wants to be connected with Krishna. And everyone makes sure that they're connected with Krishna at every minute. But some people are connected with Krishna's spiritual energy. And most, that's the rare, the sadhus, the saintly persons. And then, but the 99.99% of the population, they are connected with Krishna's external energy, material nature. Is that a reflection of what?
Wanting to be like God.
Well, the basic mentality of material existence. See, the Lord is the supreme enjoyer, as he confirms in Bhagavad Gita, Bhoktaram Jagatapasam Sarvaloka Maheshwaram. I own everything, and therefore everything is meant for my enjoyment, he tells Arjuna. So if we try to imitate that I try to be the enjoyer, I may try to enjoy as a female in a certain way. Females are inclined to try to enjoy in one way, and males are, it doesn't matter whether you try to enjoy in a female way or a male way, we all try to enjoy here. But that is an artificial position, because we're trying to imitate Krishna's position. The real reality is that we're meant to be enjoyed by the Lord, and our real enjoyment is to do everything for his enjoyment. That's how we can enjoy unlimitedly.
I guess that's what I'm asking is, is, isn't it natural for us to want to enjoy since we're his part and parcel?
Yes, that is natural. Because Krishna is enjoyer. It's also natural for us to enjoy, but we should know what is the proper way to enjoy that it can actually bring us enjoyment. It is natural to want to enjoy, but the trouble is, due to a poor fund of knowledge, we're trying to enjoy in such a way that it's causing us unlimited misery, birth after birth. The way to actually enjoy is to always see that Krishna is enjoying. And then you enjoy on an equal level with God. Would you like some, tenth class enjoyment? Or do you want first class enjoyment? It's your choice. You want first class or tenth class? You see, you can choose. What sort of enjoyment would you like? You want first class or tenth class? What will you take? First class or tenth class enjoyment? First. So first class enjoyment is you give loving service to God. And then you enjoy equally with him. Just like the servant of the king. He enjoys the same palace life the king enjoys. He has beautiful silk clothing. The king makes sure he's well fed, well housed. Everything, full facility, the same festivals, the same meals, even he eats the king, then the king eats. King eats first, but then he gets all the same food the king ate. You see, whatever's left over. He's eating the same royal food, the same royal atmosphere. The king is living and the servant is also living. So you just forget to be a servant of the king, you will enjoy it on an equal level with the king. If you think, well, I'm just going to, it's like a child, instead of serving the parents, sometimes we see they run away from home. They think, well, I'll enjoy separately. But they're miserable. You know, a runaway child is miserable in constant anxiety. And where will I eat? How will I survive? So they simply go back to their parents and everything is, all the problems are solved. Next question. Yes.
In your thought for the day, which you say every day, you have said that some people, they don't like you to say about yourself. But those may be the few people, most of them like me, would like to know about your practical experience. What happened when you were in Vrindavan, especially in the ISKCON temple, which you were not able to put in your thought of the day program?
Yes. Yes, we have our e-course, the Ultimate Self-Realization course, and our most popular feature of that course is Thought for the Day. It comes every day in your email if you go to www.backtotohome.com. You can sign up if you're not already on it. It's very popular. We have over 5,700 students in over 100 countries around the world who are taking it. I mean to say, not college students, but they're readers. We have over 5,700 readers in over 100 countries. So sometimes people complain, well, I signed up this course to get philosophy, and why are you telling about what you're doing? They object sometimes. Why are you telling about what you're doing? But we have replied that actually, because what we're doing is we're living these teachings. Therefore, what we're actually doing is a lesson as well as telling you the philosophy. So in this line, we can sometimes describe not only what the teachings are, but how we are putting the teachings into practice. And that will help the readers, our listeners, to understand how they also can put the philosophy into practical action. So there is a holy place called Sri Vrindavan Dham, which was manifested by Lord Krishna. In fact, there's so many pastimes. But Krishna, whenever he comes to this world, he comes to Sri Vrindavan Dham. It is a very special abode. The Lord has manifested in this existence. And that Sri Vrindavan Dham, which is called Bhoma Vrindavan, the earthly Vrindavan, is non-different from the original Vrindavan in the spiritual world. So when you go to that Sri Vrindavan Dham in the modern-day India, you're actually entering into the kingdom of God in the real sense. It may not appear so, but if you see it through the eyes of Guru, through the eyes of Shastra, through the eyes of the sadhus, then you'll realize you have actually entered into a transcendental abode which is situated beyond this material existence. in that holy Dhamma Vrindavan, even just by inhaling the air, you become spiritually surcharged, what to speak of touching the dust. So what we do when we enter that, it's like when we enter the temple, we bow down, and we're in the mandir. So when we get out of the taxi cab and we arrive in Vrindavan, we get down in the dirt and offer our dandavats in the dirt. Because we have entered into the Lord's transcendental abode, Sri Vrindavan Dham. So Srila Prabhupada, our beloved founder Acharya, His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Tridandi Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada, has established the most beautiful, wonderful temple in the whole world. It is called Krishna Balaram Mandir. And that area of Vrindavan where the temple was established is known as Raman Reti, even nowadays of the modern address. It is the on the address when you give the letter, well, it's a letter coming from Raman Reti. Raman Reti means pleasure sands because it is in that area where Krishna and the cowherd's boys used to frolic in the forest with the cows and the calves, I mean to say. And the boys took care of the cows and the fathers, they took care of fathers the cows and the boys the calves. So Krishna and his boyfriends, they used to frolic in the pleasure sands at Raman Reti. So Prabhupada has established that temple right there. So you can go to that temple and be right in the spot. You can be, you actually, when you sit in the temple to hear the class or you go for the darshan, you're actually standing at a spot where Krishna himself was walked 5,000 years ago. Krishna actually stood and then we have a place of residence right across the street. Krishna reigns, blessed us with having an apartment there, actually, in Vrindavan. So wherever we go, we have our home in Vrindavan. So it's just amazing when it, just sitting, just when you go to take rest at night, you think, well, Krishna actually was at this spot. Some of his pastimes with Krishna, or with the cowherd boys, I mean, or the gopis. These pastimes went on at this very spot where I'm sitting right now, where I'm getting ready to take rest for the night. Krishna had his pastimes here. And the amazing thing is that for those who are actually self-realized, those pastimes are still going on at this very minute. It is called Nitya Lila, the eternal pastimes of the Lord. So the holy Dham, Sri Vrindavan, is a wonderful, wonderful place. You can go, and there are knowledgeable devotees there who reside there who can actually show you. Now, you shouldn't go to the regular people around town because they do it as a business and you never know. But if you go to the ISKCON temple, you see, and ask for some devotee who can take you and show you the places, then the temple will, the devotees there will arrange a knowledgeable devotee who actually knows the bona fide places, who's not doing it as a money-making thing, and he'll tell you anything to make money. No. But you go to the ISKCON temple and you can actually get someone who's not greedy, who's just doing it as a service, who can actually show you the exact spot where Krishna did this, Krishna did that. And there's it's a huge area, about 64 square miles, if I remember correctly the number. The Vraj Mandal area. Vraj. It's a huge area where Krishna had his pastimes. And it's a wonderful place to remember the pastimes of the Lord, to chant the Hare Krishna mantra in Vrindavan. It becomes magnified 1,000 times the potency. So one has to be very careful not to do anything like drinking tea or anything that's against Vaishnava principles when you're there, smoking cigarettes or being rude, you know, to people. One has to be very, very much on your toes to do everything in a saintly way when you're there, because anything you do wrong, you also get 1,000 times reaction, negative reaction. So in Vrindavan, everything is magnified. So when one goes there and tries to just be very humble and very pure with every thought, every word, and every deed, so you get all the tremendous spiritual advancement while you're in Vrindavan. But one of the most delightful aspects of Vrindavan is going on Govardhan Parikrama, where you can circumambulate the hill. It's about 17 miles. Walk around the Govardhan. And devotees like to go barefoot. You don't have to, but we like to go barefoot because it's like you take your shoes off and you come into the temple. So it's a temple. Even though it's outdoors, and you're walking on public streets and everything, we go barefoot around Govardhan. Devotees, you don't have to, but devotees like to do that, and almost everyone does that because it's you're walking on sacred ground where Krishna and his, had his pastimes. And there's so many temples. I mean, it's a wonderful place to go and be completely surcharged in spiritual life. We recommend everyone to go to Vrindavan and spend as much time as possible at the Krishna Balaram Mandir, where there's a 24-hour kirtan going on, wonderful lectures every morning, wonderful aartis, wonderful kirtans, and it's just a wonderful, wonderful atmosphere. And when you're there, you must go to Prabhupada's samadhi and Prabhupada's room also, and pray to Prabhupada for his blessings that you can become the pure devotee of Krishna. Because Prabhupada said that Vrindavan is his home. He's actually eternally residing there. So we recommend everyone, don't just go to India to see your relatives. I mean, you can do that, but first thing is go to Vrindavan. Or better yet, go grab your family members and take them to Vrindavan with you so they can become purified by the Holy Dham. So any other questions? Okay, we'll stop here. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.